Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, October 20th, 2017, and the Green Bay Packers are wrapping up another week of preparation to get ready for Sunday's game against the New Orleans Saints at Lambeau Field, back home for the first time after, what was it, a two-game road swing to Dallas and Minnesota. But before we talk about that game in particular, there is a little bit of news on Aaron Rodgers. He underwent surgery on Thursday to repair his broken collarbone, and now the Packers can start to figure out some sort of a timetable for his return. What do you sort of think about, you know, that situation in general? Do you think it's feasible that he can come back based on what you know about the injury, Tom?
You know, until I am able to look at the MRIs and the x-rays, I really can't tell you exactly what's going to happen.
So Monday's podcast should be informative. We'll get a look over the weekend.
Yeah. I'll see if I can get Aaron to send me his work there, and we'll go over it. I'd like to get video of the surgery as well, just to make sure everything went okay. I'm being facetious because who the heck knows? I mean, nobody's going to tell us how the surgery went, and other than they're going to say it was successful. And, you know, maybe McCarthy will shed a little bit of light on it later Friday when, he meets with us. But my gut feeling is they won't put him on IR, that they'll hold out some hope. The only... If it's just so obvious to them that he's not going to play again this year, of course they're going to put him on injured reserve. But if there's any chance that he can play, I think they keep him active.
Did you know that every surgery that's ever been performed on an athlete has been successful?
I have heard that, yes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the case. Although, you know...
They didn't botch your shoulder, did they?
Well, no. I remember when I was covering University of Wisconsin, there was a safety who injured his knee, and the team doctor ended up repairing the wrong knee, operating on the wrong knee. So I would say that's not successful.
Yeah, especially because, like, you know, you get in there and you would think that you wouldn't find anything.
Yeah, since it's probably was like, boy, we overestimated this injury because it looks pretty good. Or either that or the guy had two bad knees. But
did he get sued for malpractice?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Yes, he did. As I recall, he did.
Now they make you sign your body parts with your own handwriting.
Yes, I've done that myself.
Me too.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think they're going to keep Rodgers on the 53-man roster. He'll be inactive, obviously, every week, one of their seven inactives. And I don't know. I just think that with as much as they've left the door open so far, you know, if the surgery went according to plan, I kind of feel like he's going to come back at some point toward the end of the season. But then it's just a matter of where they are relative
right,
to everybody else.
Right. If they're totally out of the playoff race, you'd be stupid to bring him back. It's a risk either way. You know, you're going to be better off 6, 8, 10 months from now than you are 2 months from now. So what about this, though? What if Brett Hundley is really good and they start winning? You know, do you trade Rodgers? Let's start the rumors, because I guarantee you if they win on Sunday against New Orleans, there will be people say, hey, why don't you see what you can get for Aaron Rodgers? Maybe you could get a pass rusher for him, you know, or something like that.
So, is this what goes on in the live blog when I'm not watching?
Yeah, let's get a quarterback controversy started. I think that would make this really interesting year.
And then they could trade for Taysom Hill, and he could battle Hundley for the starting job without Rodgers.
Yeah, trade Rodgers for Hill straight up.
So I wrote a story in today's paper just sort of looking at teams over the last, well, since the year 2000, that have had to play at least 5 games in a season without a quarterback that had either already won an MVP or would go on to win one at some point. And the numbers were pretty interesting. So there were 9 teams that have been in that scenario. And of those 9, 6 of them finished with 7 wins or less in a season. The 2 that made the playoffs were the 2013 Packers and the 2000 Rams with Kurt Warner. Mm. Both failed to win a game. The overall records of those 9 teams with in those seasons where an MVP quarterback missed at least 5 games, 57, 86, and 1. And the record, the combined record of all the backup quarterbacks for those teams is 34-53-1.
That's pretty brutal. It's and pretty that bad. Includes an 11-5 with
New
Matt
England.
Cassel, right?
Yeah, with New England. And then had I gone back 1 year prior to 99, the Titans went 13-3 and made the Super Bowl, even though Steve McNair missed more than five games in that season. But in the years that I looked at it, it was the Packers, as we mentioned, in 14. The Indianapolis Colts went 2-14 in 2011 without Peyton Manning.
That was bad.
Can you name their three quarterbacks that year?
Let me think. Wow. What year was that again?
2011. Of their three quarterbacks, only one ever won a game.
Was Chase Daniel one of those? No.
No.
Hasselbeck? No.
No.
No, he was with
You're going to have to keep digging here.
Holy cow. Give me a hint.
All right. The first one once guided the Giants to the Super Bowl.
Oh, Kerry Collins.
Correct.
Yep.
Gave way to a former Purdue quarterback who was way worse than Drew Brees.
Kyle Orton?
Curtis Painter.
Oh, Curtis Painter. Yeah.
And then the only one that won a game, the pride of UConn, Dan Orlovsky.
Oh, man.
He went 2-3,
I
think. I
never gotten those last two. Never.
So then you had the Patriots, who went 11-5 in 2008, as you pointed out, and missed the playoffs at 11-5.
Yeah, that was a fluky year.
Then you had the Arizona Cardinals with Kurt Warner in 2005. They went 5-11.
And he replaced who?
Kurt Warner was the MVP.
And who replaced him?
Josh McCown.
Wow.
McCown went 3-3.
Okay.
Then you had the 2004 Titans. McNair missed a big chunk of time. They went 5-11, and that was McNair and Billy Volek.
Oh, Billy Volek, yeah. Billy Volek had a good arm.
Then you had the Oakland Raiders in 03 and 04. So Gannon won MVP, Rich Gannon, in 2002. Mm-hmm. Then in 03... they went 4-12 and 5-11 the next year.
That wasn't with the fat quarterback, was it? The first round.
No, it was not Jamarcus Russell.
Jamarcus Russell.
So the first year it was Rich Gannon, followed by Marcus Tuiasosopo.
Oh yeah.
Followed by Rick Meyer or Meyer. Okay, Rick Meyer. There you go.
Yeah.
Then the year after that, we have another resurfacing of Kerry Collins, And he went the rest of the way and threw 21 interceptions in how many games? In 13 games.
Wow.
And then last but not least, you had Kurt Warner again in 2000 and 2002 with the Rams. His backup quarterbacks were Trent Green.
Yeah. Well,
and
Trent Green was the starter.
In a different season.
Okay.
This one, he came in off the bench. Then there was Jamie Martin. Mark Bulger, and the one and only start of his career, Scott Covington.
Wow.
These are names that I would never, ever come across again. But moral of the story is that since the year 2000, if you lose an MVP quarterback for more than five games, your season is more than likely not going to the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, there's a reason for that, too. I think there's a some connection there, and it's that those teams are built around their quarterback. When you have an MVP quarterback, you build your entire team around him.
Exactly.
And you make it so that you do live and breathe by that guy. And the Packers are like that. But I also think the Packers have enough talent around Hundley to be a competitive team. I still think they can be okay on defense. And if they ever get their offensive line healthy, then they got a chance to still compete for the NFC North. But a lot of things have to fall in place. And McCarthy has to push all the right buttons, starting with making Aaron Jones a starting running back.
But where did I read about that?
Yeah. I don't want to hammer that in or anything, you know.
But no, I think you're right. I mean, they're 4-2 now, and it's not inconceivable to think 8-8 could win the NFC North. It might not, but it could.
Yeah. I'm not saying they couldn't go 9-7. I still think there's so much that can happen between now and then. And that's why making predictions on season records is just a joke. You know,
another common theme from that list we went with is that A lot of the teams that lost their MVP quarterback also lost whoever the next guy was.
Wow.
There was a bunch of teams on that list that had to go to a third stringer.
Well, if that happens, then we know what's going on.
They reached the Super Bowl with Callahan.
Although Joe Callahan, you know, I was talking to him today, Thursday, and we were talking about his short time with Drew Brees, and, you know, they're like carbon copy physically.
That is true.
Two guys, you know, and he said he learned a lot from Drew Brees, so in the 8 days that he was with the Saints.
But if you go down the list, I mean, the Packers went through Seneca Wallace, Tolzien, and who am I missing?
Matt Flynn.
Then you look at the Colts. We already went through their three, so they couldn't make it with just a second stringer. The Patriots obviously got through with Castle.
It helps if you have an established backup.
Exactly, I mean, which the Packers do not.
Well, at least they have a guy who's been in the system for 3 years, who they drafted with high expectations, who was probably should have been drafted higher, but had some knocks against him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's similarities, but there's differences, too.
So since we just spent a bunch of time talking about Hundley and the offense, let's sort of transition that into their matchup against the Saints defense.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Saints came off that game against the Detroit Lions where they put up, what, 52 points?
Yes.
And a bunch of the scores were defensive scores.
Right.
And the majority of them came from their pass rush getting hands on the football, tip passes, things like that. Plus one pick six by the rookie Marshon Lattimore. So when you look at this defensive front, what, if anything, jumps out to you?
Well, first of all, number one is Cameron Jordan. That's he's the bell cow. He's the guy that you have to keep an eye on. You have to get blocked. It's sort of like Cincinnati, you know, where you have to be his name is all of
Geno Atkins.
Geno Atkins. You have to be on top of him all the time. So that's kind of the case with Cameron Jordan, and he'll move all over the place. The other thing is that they're going to show you a lot of different fronts. They're going to play 3-4, 4-3, whatever. This is Dennis Allen is the defensive coordinator, the guy who was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders for a while and with the Denver Broncos. And then, you know, they'll blitz. They'll bring some guys. One of those one of those sacks of Stafford in the end zone was a great blitz they had. It was a zone blitz. I think it was either a safety or a linebacker came off the edge. Anyway, they got to get those guys blocked first. If they can do that, you know, if they have their two tackles, which I think they will, then they might be able to get something done. But, you know, you definitely have to – you got to run the ball against these guys. You have to try to run the ball. Even if you're not getting something right away, something will pop because they're so aggressive. And so you better stick to it.
Yeah, and I mean, aside from Cameron Jordan, there's not a ton of overwhelming talent on that defensive line.
No, and you know, they're – the defensive line. Yeah, they're solid. That Trey Hendrickson had a decent game against the Lions. You know, Sheldon Rankins, he's been around for a while. Okafor is an okay guy. They're a better team at home on turf.
Sure.
But I still think they can produce some nice pass rush.
But make no doubt about it, I think this has to be a welcome sight for a group that just got trashed by Minnesota's defensive front. I mean, there's a different level there.
Yeah, well, and playing at home on grass
True.
Against a dome team is always an advantage. But we'll see. A lot of this is going to just come down to, one, again, can they run the ball? And two, can Hundley avoid throwing three interceptions? And, you know, throw for 200 yards and complete 60% of his passes and just keep the offense moving a little bit. You know, New Orleans' defense is very similar, at least in the secondary, as the Packers. I mean, they've got a first-round pick and a second-round pick in their secondary. Lattimore is the first-round pick, and Marcus Williams is the second. And then they have a veteran safety, Kenny Vaccaro, who's, you know, their Morgan Burnett or Clinton Dix. So they have there's some similarity, and the Packers have to press that secondary. They got to, in addition to running, they've got to at least take some shots down the field.
I'm looking forward to seeing how, if and how, Montgomery or Jones or whichever combination they use can maybe try and take advantage of some of the linebackers of the Saints in coverage. You know, you look at the three that they have, it's going to be Craig Robertson, Manti Te'o, and A.J. Klein, and none of those guys can really run that well laterally. And I wonder if you know, Jones can get out in space. You talked about those screen passes the other day. If they can set those types of things up, can they take advantage of maybe a little bit of a slow-footed linebacking core there?
Yeah, I think the screen will be a big play for them from now on. I don't think it was a big play with Aaron Rodgers, but I think it will be with Hundley.
Except for that 1 year with James Starks 2 seasons ago where they ran screens every time.
And Lacy had a few too, but Starks was really good at it. Yeah, well, Starks was really good at setting himself up.
Yeah.
And also, he was a big target. You know, Aaron, that's the downside on Aaron Jones is he's not a big target. Starks, if the ball was high, you know, he could reach up and get it. And that's what happened the other day in Minnesota, where Hundley couldn't be accurate with it. And maybe Starks, well, I don't know. They were pretty overthrown, but I wonder if Starks could have gotten one or two of those.
Could be. Could be. You know, the other thing about this defense is that when they go into their sub-package, they only have three guys at the line of scrimmage. They play like a 3-2, which is kind of unique and not what you see a lot. Whereas the Packers, in their nickel or dime, would play either a 4-2 or a 4-1. Yeah. The Saints use a ton of three guys at the line of scrimmage. I don't really know the philosophy behind that, but that's what they did against Detroit.
Yeah, I think that's just one of their many looks that they'll give. And I think they'll create other looks. You know, usually when you have that some sort of a 3-2 or 3-3, you're usually using one of those guys. You know, one of the linebackers is going to become a rusher.
Right.
You just have to guess where he's coming from. So we'll see. I'm interested to see how they go at Hundley.
Yeah, you know, they brought a decent amount of pressure against Stafford, and a lot of it came from, I mean, they did blitz some linebackers, there's no question, but they blitzed their safeties and their DBs a lot as well. You know, that's one thing that, you know, again, that's one way you can sort of minimize any damage that Montgomery or Jones has in the rushing game is if you bring guys off the edge and make them stay in. How big of an advantage is it from a passing game standpoint if Bakhtiari and Bulaga are both there?
Well, it's huge. It's absolutely huge because you don't have to leave guys in. You can use your tight ends, which Hundley really needs. Again, I think Richard Rodgers, two guys I think are going to have a bigger impact than everyone thinks are Richard Rodgers and Geronimo Allison. Watch those two guys in the coming weeks because Hundley has a relationship with those guys. He played with them a lot in training camp, and I just think he has a better rhythm. Or, you know, eventually Devontae Adams and Nelson and Cobb are going to be his guys. But in the early going, he's going to go to his what he knows. And I'm going to be interested to see if it's Richard Rodgers and Allison.
Anything jump out to you about the secondary for the Saints aside from the presence of one Chris Banjo, former Packer?
Yeah, well, that's special teams, you know. Chris
right.
Banjo is a special
yeah,
teams.
He doesn't. Demon. I don't think he plays any snaps from scrimmage.
Him and Janice are going to be going at it. That's going to be a great matchup.
Oh,
Chris
I didn't
Banjo
think of that.
Is a really good special teams player. He was probably their best special teams
yeah.
player when they cut him. Even, I'm kind of. That'll be fun to watch.
That will be. I hope they actually line him up outside and see if they'll go at each
other.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
Well,
but he used to stay in on punt
protection.
Yeah,
Banjo is more of a middle guy.
Yeah.
He's not really a hold-up guy. But either way, that'll be fun to watch.
So the secondary, you've got Marshon Lattimore, the rookie first-round pick from Ohio State on one side. You have Ken Crawley, a former undrafted rookie, on the other side.
I don't really know much about him.
I don't either. And then the weird thing was, well, I guess it's not weird because the Packers do it too, but they used Kenny Vaccaro as a nickel against the Lions,
mm-hmm.
which you would think that with Golden Tate that wouldn't be a favorable matchup, but they did it. I don't know if you can do that against Cobb.
Well, Yeah, right. I mean, they did it because Golden Tate is such a physical receiver, and you're not really worried about him beating you down the field. But I saw him breaking tackles all over the
place. Did you see his touchdown run, that 45? Yes. That was one of the most embarrassing defensive plays I've seen in a long time.
Oh, it was bad. There, how many missed tackles were there?
At least
like the
three
Packers
or four.
Secondary,
oh,
the way
boy.
They were going after him.
Don't say that.
Looked like... Josh Hawkins is trying to bring down Golden Tate.
Josh Hawkins has a really nice pirouette move that nobody should ever see, because it's not something you want to look at if you're Joe Witt and Dom Capers. Yeah. But he spins around pretty well. Now, what do you think? I guess in terms of this unit as it matches up against some of the Packers receivers, I got to think that with what Davante Adams did to Jordan Lewis, and I know Lattimore's a first round pick, but I mean, I don't know if he's seen footwork like Adams, if that's who he ends up with.
Yeah. There's definitely – if Aaron Rodgers was quarterbacking this game, then I would pick the Packers, and I would expect them to put up a lot of points. I think – as I said, I think New Orleans is a better dome team than they're going to be on grass. But, there'll be some yards to get there. It's just whether Hundley can get him for them.
And I think he's going to face a ton of pressure. I think sure. Edgar Bennett kind of alluded to that a little bit when we spoke to him on Thursday. Is it reasonable to think that they could blitz something like almost as high as 35 or 40% of the time?
Oh, sure. But, the Packers are going to anticipate that. And I think they're going to try to slow him down. I really do, with some read option stuff that's going to hold the ends. I think they're going to try a lot of bootlegs, screens, rollouts, all that kind of stuff, just to protect Hundley. A lot of those things protect Hundley, and they don't necessarily lead to huge plays, but they don't need huge plays. They need long, sustained drives, and that's going to be the key.
Over or under two interceptions for Hundley on Sunday?
I think he'll have two at least.
At least?
Yeah, I think he'll have two. There's going to be some tip balls, I think.
Yeah.
I would say over or under. Well, I'm going to bet right on the number.
Okay, you're going to push.
That's my number, yeah.
All right, I'll say over. I'm not sold on his accuracy yet. I just don't buy it at this point. I got to see it a little bit more. And against a team that tipped as many passes as they did against Matt Stafford, who is clearly a more accomplished and established quarterback, I'll be interested to see how they fare in that regard.
I'm going to bet you on the first play of the game. It's going to be a bootleg to Martellus Bennett. They're going to fake the run to the left. They're going to boot to the right.
And he'll
gonna
drop it.
Martellus Bennett.
And he'll drop
we'll
it.
We'll see. It'll be some – yeah, we'll see if – But anyway, that's going to be the play.
So I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say they're going to just open the playbook and it'll be a run-pass option. No, just kidding. No, I don't think we'll see many run-pass options at all with Hundley.
Well, he's going to have to get them in good plays occasionally. They're not going to remove that completely from their offense.
No.
They're not going to give him as much latitude as they give Rodgers.
No, absolutely. Anything else on the Packers' offense against that defense before
nope.
we flip sides?
I'm done.
Okay, so now we take a look at the Saints' offense, and everything starts, of course, with Drew Brees, the 38-year-old quarterback who probably doesn't have the same arm strength that he did when he came into the league or even in his peak, but I mean, the accuracy is still there. He's only been sacked four times, I think, all season, Dom Capers said, fewest in the league. He doesn't turn the ball over, although he did have a pick six against the Lions when he threw one right to A'shaun Robinson, who walked about 3 feet into the end zone from the goal line. But, I mean, this is still a guy that I think can damage a secondary. Would you agree?
Yeah. It's always – with Drew Brees, it's always a matter of who he's got around him, because he's going to consistently get the ball out. He's accurate. He's smart. But he also – relies on his guys getting open and doing something after the catch. He's always had guys, like speedsters. He's always had like a Devery Henderson or Brandon Cooks who stress the secondary, and then he kills you underneath with some of those crossing routes. So I don't think this is the strongest group of receivers he's had.
No, by far.
And I think if the Packers have House and, more importantly, Kevin King, to me, stabilizes the entire secondary as soon as he's on the field. He changes a lot just because you could count on him. He's going to give up some passes, but he hasn't given up a touchdown yet this year. He really hasn't given up. I'm trying to think what his longest play was, probably 30 some yards.
Something to AJ Green, probably.
Yeah. So that'll, once they do that, that kind of opens some options. I think not having Morgan Burnett, I'm guessing they won't have him. That hurts a little bit.
I'm still not sold they're going to have House either. The fact that he's still limited with this pesky quad thing.
Yeah, that's true, too. You never know with him.
Pipkins is still in the concussion protocol. Demarius Randall's on the injury report. They don't have too much there right now.
No, they are pretty thin there. But as I said, I still think once you have King in there.
That's the lock
now. You have a stable side of the field, or you have a guy who can go with anybody you want. He could go on Michael Thomas. Even though Michael Thomas is huge, he could still go with him.
Yeah, that was sort of the next point I was going to bring up, is I think that they could go one of two ways in terms of assigning him to somebody. You could put him on Thomas simply because if House is unable to play, then Thomas has an enormous size advantage against your Demarius Randall or your Josh Hawkins or your Lindsey Pipkins. So King, at least in terms of height and length, is the closest that can match him. Certainly not in girth, but in length. Or you could take it the other way and put him on Ginn simply because he's the fastest guy that you have aside from Hawkins. But I wonder if you stick Hawkins on Ginn and just, I mean, try and get 4-3-9 against 4-3-5 and see what you got there.
Yeah, it's possible they could do that. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to play them. If they're going to play a lot of man, or if they're going to change things up a little and play some zone, like play some of that 4-3 that they did, sort of make Drew Brees have to dink and dunk it down the field.
Well, that's my guess because I mean, if you play man with Ted Ginn and he beats you over and over again on these deep crossing routes, I just don't think, even if it's King. I mean, I still think I would take Ginn on a deep crossing route against a rookie.
Yeah, you have to. Ted Ginn had a really good game, but you also have to keep in mind, you know, his history. He's been hurt a lot.
Yeah, he drops passes.
He's not always consistent. He looked great against the Lions.
Yes, he did.
That one that they ran out of a bunch formation, and he cuts across the field with Darius Slay trailing him, and then he just runs around everybody. I mean, it was embarrassing for the Detroit secondary.
It's impressive that he can still run like that at 33.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he is, I mean, you know, he was a legitimate 4-3 guy and a super athlete.
Track star.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to want to play zone. And, you know, Drew Brees will lead up a zone.
True.
But maybe you're okay with it if it helps you play the run a little bit better and it kind of knocks out some of those crossing routes.
You know, the cornerback situation is one that could potentially be catastrophic for them with as much as the Saints spread things out. I mean, they'll run bunch formations to one side, as you mentioned, with that Ted Ginn formation that they used for that touchdown. They'll run 4 and 5 wide. And if you potentially don't have House, you might not have Pipkins if he doesn't clear the protocol. Mm-hmm. You might not have Randall, or, you know, Randall's inevitably going to bounce in and out of the lineup because he gets hurt every single week. I mean, what do? You basically just have King and Hawkins. I mean, do you think there's any chance they promote Donatello Brown before kickoff on Sunday?
I'd be surprised. Pipkins was out there on Thursday, I believe.
He was?
He was practicing. So I don't know if he's out, but yeah, if you're down there, those guys, well, then you got to employ Josh Jones a little bit.
And Bryce.
Or you have to play some base defense and just go with two corners and, you know, hope your linebackers, or maybe you go nitro with two corners and have Josh Jones play in the slot.
Yeah.
There's some options there. But, New Orleans is going to spread them out, and if they see that they're down some corners, then it'll be up to the pass rush, and the pass rush is going to have to get at them. They're going to have to take advantage of New Orleans' offensive line.
So let's move there next, and I think that Saints offensive line can be exposed. I don't think it's anything spectacular.
Yeah.
Left tackle Teron Armstead, left guard Andrus Peat, center Max Unger, right guard Larry Warford, the free agent addition from the Lions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then right tackle the ex-Badger Ryan Ramczyk, who was forced into duty, wasn't really going to start this year. So what do you make of that unit there collectively?
I think there's some hay to be made there. I think that they're going to be pretty decent run blocking group. Ingram had a really nice game against the Lions, and he's good. He's just really good. And Warford has been a warrior for the Lions. Packers have a lot of experience playing him. Unger is a really solid player. They traded him for Jimmy Graham, you know. So Armstead has some athletic ability. I just think that this is one of those games where Matthews and Perry have to come up, have to show up, and have to put a lot of pressure on Ramczyk and Armstead, and just push the edges, and also get something up the middle. You know, Daniels and Clark, if they can do any of that, then they'll have a decent chance to slow them down. It's really going to come down to pass rush.
So I'm really eager to see what the Saints do, or I guess I should say what the Packers do against Andrus Peat at left guard. He's 6'7".
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask him to try and get leverage against a Mike Daniels or a Kenny Clark that are built squat and low to the ground, yeah. I mean, that is a brutal challenge. And so I wonder if Daniels could have a field day just getting under his pads throughout the game.
If he can, and if he can move them, you can get under a guy's pads, but you still got to be able to bull rush him back.
Yep.
Now, Daniels can do that, and Clark is capable of that, but we'll see. I don't know. They're going to be ready for it, and coming up the middle, yeah, I agree. That's going to be really a key for the Packers all the way around. Pass rush, pass rush, pass rush, pass rush.
You mentioned Ingram and what you think of his abilities. I was pretty impressed by the rookie Alvin Kamara from Tennessee.
He's kind of an exciting player.
Yeah, he's got the ability to run, but he's more of this pass-catching dynamic threat that they can use as a guy in the screen game. They can swing it out to him. He can line up as a receiver.
Yeah,
I think he's got 25 receptions already this season. He's their kick returner. What type of a challenge do you think that poses for the Packers?
It's big. It's very big. It's not unlike, you know, facing Tevin Coleman little bit. Packers did a pretty good job on that. Trying to think if there was anybody else similar to that.
McKinnon is kind of like that, just smaller.
Yes, yeah. And so that will be a challenge. They're going to use both those guys. And, you know, Ingram is the big threat right off the bat. You just have to – you can't let him get going, because that's the kind of back he is. He may go 10 times with 25 yards, but then he's going to just start wearing you down.
Yep.
And they gotta do something with him.
So I guess when you look at this matchup overall, is it as clearly in favor of the Saints, just given Hundley's freshness and everything, as the bettors would have you believe? It swung from, I think, a 6-point favorite for the Packers, or 6.5, all the way to 5.5 for the Saints in the last week.
Yeah. It's the Saints. If the Saints start putting up points, then the Packers are done.
Agreed.
You know? If they come out early and it's 17-0 or even like 17-3 or whatever, then I just don't see the Packers being able to rally. So it's really going to be on the defense to slow them down, make it a field position game to start.
Justin Vogel better be ready to play.
Exactly. And the secondary better be ready to tackle, because Breeze is going to complete passes, but you got to get their receivers down.
No, I agree. And I almost think that one way to look at this game, at least in my own head, is that I think if the Saints score 24 or more, they're probably going to win.
Probably.
Because I just don't think that Hundley can put up that many points. And if they keep it to under that, I think it's a toss-up. But at the end of the day, I think New Orleans is going to win this one. That's not to say that Hundley can't win games in the next couple of weeks, but I just think for his first week to try and have to out-duel Breeze, if Breeze is rolling and that offense is working, I don't see it.
Yeah, and let's say it's a close game, and let's say it's a tie game in the fourth quarter.
Who do you want
final,
with the ball?
Yeah, final 3 minutes, and the Packers have the ball, and Hundley can't lead them, and then all of a sudden Breeze has got the ball at his own 40 with a minute 40 left. I'm taking the Saints, you know, and that's kind of a scenario you could see happening. So either way, they've got a huge advantage with Breeze versus Hundley. And so right now I think you have to play off of that and assume that New Orleans is going to win.
Who would you take against the spread? 5.5 for New Orleans.
I do think it's possible it could be a field goal game. I do think it just so much depends on who's in the lineup for the Packers.
Yeah, it really does.
It's so.
And who stays in the lineup?
Yeah,
because even if Bakhtiari and Bulaga start, you know, those guys tend to be injury prone. I don't think they're going to have Lane Taylor. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't think Lane Taylor will play. I don't think. I mean, Lane Taylor's a good player. They can survive with Justin McCray if they have Bakhtiari and Bulaga.
I agree.
That'll determine whether they cover or not, whether they have those two guys, and whether they have enough corners available.
So we'll have to see how all of that plays out over the next 48 hours. The Packers will put out – well, if there's any changes to the injury report, they'll make those on Saturday afternoon, and the final injury report will be tomorrow – or later today.
Yes.
Yeah, later today.
So check the website. We'll have it up there.
Yep. Check PackersNews.com and JSOnline.com. Plug the live blog.
Yes. Don't forget the live blog. Let's go, you know, don't give up on the live blog. You can give up on the Packers, but you can't give up on the live blog.
So. It's a noon kickoff this week?
Noon kickoff, yep. And if you want to talk about some other game that's going on, I'll do that. You know,
okay.
Whatever it takes. You want to talk soccer? Sure. I don't know anything
about it,
but Mike, I can ask Mike about it, yeah.
So come for the live blog and talk about the Packers or anything else you want.
Stay for the coffee.
It's a free friend. You're offering friendship. That's
absolutely
what this is about.
Absolutely.
All right, so until then, check all of our content online and subscribe to the paper, too, if you don't mind.
Yeah, what's wrong with you? Come on, get out there.
And until then, we will talk to you guys soon.
They do. They smile.